The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 346, recorded on April 1st, 2014. And welcome to the 346th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast, the 179th edition of the Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Jordan Lund.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback. Now, today is April 1st, so I decided my April Fool's Day prank would be that there's no prank. There's plenty of that going around right now.
There's entirely too much of that going around on the internet. It's become a point where I just don't even turn on the internet on April 1st.
You know, the problem is that when I try to find news items, it's kind of hard to do.
Yeah, because all of the news items are fake.
And even the ones that, you know, even the thing is that all the companies get in the act, so all their stuff is news items is like the, you know, Blizzard is doing their Jolly Reaver prank.
How many Half-Life 3 announcements were there today?
Well, there was a Half-Life 3 review on Games Radar, along with a review of Psychonauts 2, Shenmue 3, and another game that's never coming out. No, it wasn't Beyond Good and Evil 2. Anyway, the other thing is that actually one of the news items is about Practical Jokes as well.
Yes.
But the problem with doing all this is that this episode is not going to be released on April 1st anyway. So what would be the point of doing a practical joke?
Exactly.
You know?
There's nothing staler than a late April Fool's joke.
Yeah. So what have you been playing?
Well, I finished off Infamous Second Son and have been going through slowly the paper trail, which doesn't seem to update anywhere near fast enough.
You know, there's also an update supposed to be posted either today or tomorrow.
Yeah, they're updating the game to allow you to choose the time of day and do a couple of other things.
So, from what I understand, Infamous Second Son is basically a dumbed-down version of the first two games.
I think it very much is a dumbed-down version of the first two games, yes. It's not as involved as the first two games. It's more involved in the amount of powers that you get. The first two games, you really only had electricity. But in this game, you have a variety of powers to choose from. The downside is the enemies are all the same, right? So in the first two games, your enemies had different powers. In Second Son, not so much.
Well, one of the powers is smoke, if I remember correctly.
You start off with a smoke power, yes, which is very cool. You know, you being able to get into a vent and shoot up to the top of a building without having to climb it is really quite cool.
I wonder if they were more focusing on it being a tech demo than a game, though. Because, you know, smoke has volumetric fog and, you know, and all the...
That's entirely possible, and it is a very pretty game, particularly the levels that are at night with lots of neon going on. When you get neon powers, you're able to run through the city incredibly fast, and the frame rate doesn't drop, which is pretty breathtaking. But the issue that I have with it is that it feels like the old beat 'em up games. You remember the games where you just move left to right and you'd fight the same bullies over and over and over again, and all they would do is like just change the color on them, right? they don't even change the color on them in this game. But the final boss fight is stellar and spectacular. I highly recommend anyone take a look at it on YouTube.
Wasn't that always the case? I mean, remember in one of the PlayStation 3, games that were designed to show off, you know, was God of War 3, in which it had one great boss fight, and that was it. Everything was done from there. You know, it's like they had something splashy at the beginning and...
This isn't at the beginning, right? You only have, you know, really the splashy bits are the motion capture acting in the cutscenes until you get to the final boss fight, and then that is really, really amazing.
By the way, the other review that Games Radar did was for The Last Guardian.
Someday, maybe.
Well, you know, there's something weird going on right now, and that's one of the news items we're going to discuss later. But right now we're going to do a gaming flashback, and this one's a relatively recent one. Go ahead, Jordan.
Gaming flashback Far Cry. Far Cry is a first-person shooter video game developed by Crytek and published by Ubisoft on March 23rd, 2004, originally for Microsoft Windows. The game's story follows a former U.S. Army Special Forces operative, Jack Carver, who is stranded on a mysterious archipelago. He is searching for a female journalist he was escorting after she went missing when their boat was destroyed by mercenaries. The game includes thematic elements relating to the dangers of weaponizing genetic engineering and the genocide of local islanders can be seen by the deformed creatures created by a mad scientist named Krieger. The terrain in Far Cry varies greatly. Set on a South Pacific archipelago, the landscape includes beaches, dense rainforests, towering canyons, mines, swamps, and even volcanic forests. Many of the interiors range from simple beach huts and army camps to elaborate complexes, an underground temple, an ultra-modern research lab. Several of these mazes use the remains of Japanese World War II-era fortifications and bunkers. The tropical rainforest provides cover and concealment, of which the player and enemies can take advantage. Enemies react dynamically to the player's tactics and actions. If a lone mercenary spots a player, he occasionally runs for help, signaling reinforcements through use of flare guns. Enemies will work together to outmaneuver, outflank, surround, and provide suppressive fire, providing them a tactical advantage over the player, who in turn is able to spot and mark enemies on his mini-map through the use of special binoculars, which also grant the player the ability to listen to enemy conversations from afar merely by pointing the binoculars in the direction of the enemies. Crytek developed a new game engine called CryEngine for Far Cry. Reportedly, the game was born out of a technology demo called X-Isle, the dinosaur island made by Crytek to showcase the capabilities of the NVIDIA GeForce 3. The game features relatively long view or draw distance similar to Operation Flashpoint, but has a more advanced rendering system for vegetation. All of the level territory is accessible to the player without loading pauses. The game engine features seamless transitions between indoor and outdoor areas. Crytek released a spin-off, Far Cry Instincts, for the Xbox, GameCube, and PlayStation 2 systems. Far Cry Classic was an HD remake for the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. The game is available as a standalone and part of a compilation called Far Cry The Wild Expedition.
And this game basically started Crytek's career for the most part.
Well, yes, exactly.
You know, after Far Cry came Crysis.
And
then they alternated. And one thing about Far Cry was that they weren't able to get it right until Far Cry 3. I mean, there was a lot of things to like about Far Cry and Far Cry 2. There was always something that, you know, that was sort of off about them. I haven't played Far Cry 3, but I heard that you know, it finally fulfilled the series' promise. And then, of course, there's Far Cry Blood Dragon, which is a complete and total conversion and wild Tron 80s referencing fun. I haven't played that either, but I will at some point.
I really haven't played any of these games since they started primarily on PC, and I'm not really a PC gamer. Alan would be the guy to talk to about these.
But it was really, well, what about Far Cry Instincts?
Well, they released Far Cry Instincts as kind of a dumbed down console version, but you can't play that one if you haven't played the first one.
But what about Far Cry Classic then?
I never got around to getting Far Cry Classic.
The thing is that
I thought about it a couple of times.
It was an amazing tech demo of a game, you know, and it had the AI, but, you know, like everybody knows, Crytek always wants to do bleeding edge graphics, and Far Cry was amazing because you went underwater, looked like real underwater, and you could see for far that mountain in the background. Well, guess what? You can go to it, you know, that sort of thing. The draw distances and the detail of the vegetation is really high, and that's what really attracted the people.
I remember why I didn't play Far Cry Classics is because I bought a 1600 Microsoft point card and they wouldn't let me use it to buy the game. You could only buy the game with cash.
That's weird.
And so that's why I didn't buy it. I used my points for something else.
Okay. Well, that's kind of strange. I thought it was an XBLA game.
It was an XBLA game, but you could only buy it with $20 cash. You could not use points for it.
That's very strange. Wait, that can't be true anymore.
Yeah, because you don't have points anymore.
Well, the thing is that they also have a grace period in which you're allowed to, use the points as cash for a certain amount of time. I forgot, when is the limit for that again? Like May 2014?
I thought it was May of last year.
No. That's when they stopped it. But people still had cards, right? And they still had a grace period with those cards in which they could use them. And at some point, those cards become valueless. And I thought
that was long since over, but maybe it's just me.
I don't know. Maybe it was last. I'm not sure because, you know, I mean, We're going to move on to news. EA deletes nasty Wii U April Fool's tweets. And this comes just from GameSpot. Battlefield publisher Electronic Arts has deleted a string of tweets that derided the Wii U for being an underpowered system. The jabs are focused around the fact that EA's proprietary engine, Frostbite, cannot run on the Wii U. Here's some of the since-removed tweets from the Frostbite Twitter account, courtesy of Kotaku, which is able to capture them once before they were removed. Quote, good news, we finally fixed and optimized our netcode, uses quantum entanglement for zero latency connections, exclusively on Wii U. Frostbite will power Half-Life 3 coming in summer 2014. Wii U exclusive. By the way, you know what? I think there should be a moratorium on all April Fool's jokes that involve Half-Life 3. I think that's been done to death. Frostbite now runs on the Wii U. Since it is the most powerful Gen 4 platform, our renderer is now optimized for Mario and Zelda. April Fool's Day was all about having a good laugh, but many thought these tweets went too far. It appears that EA rethought its position as well, seeing as they decided to take them down. Following the publication of this story, EA Chief Operating Officer Peter Moore issued a statement on the tweets via his Twitter account, saying, our apologies to partners Nintendo of America and Fan Frostbite Engines. At Frostbite Engine's poor attempt at April Fool's, not condoned by EA, unacceptable, stupid. EA supported the Wii U at launch with games like Need for Speed Most Wanted, Mass Effect 3, FIFA 13, and Madden NFL 13. However, the publishers are no longer working on any Wii U titles whatsoever. By comparison, EA supported the original Wii with 78 titles throughout its lifetime.
Yeah, it just seemed like an unprofessional bent to take. And I'm all for April Fool's fun, but, you know, It doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah, but you know, I maybe you're feeling that way because it has some bite. You know, I mean, the fact is that you know Electronic Arts tried with the Wii U, you know, and the Wii U just couldn't handle it.
Right. No, I agree. And you know, we've had the discussion about the Wii U on the show before, but you know, it's like kicking somebody when they're down. You know.
Well, maybe this is
bad enough they don't support the console anymore, but they have to rip them apart too.
Well, I have to take issue with that they don't support the console anymore. I think it's the reverse. The console didn't support them.
That's true. I think that it's probably a two-way street, yes.
Yeah, because you know, they tried. I mean, look, Need for Speed Most Wanted and Mass Effect 3, those are pretty major games, and you know, and no one was interested. Of course, you know, not in the case of Need for Speed Most Wanted, because that was actually a game that was released with the other versions, right? But who's going to play Mass Effect 3 a year after it's released with none of the neither Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2 to go with it, you know?
Well, exactly. And we saw how that worked out on the PlayStation 3 when they did 2 but not 1.
I have to wonder, though, about FIFA 13. Do you think it was like, because I know you are going off on EA for just almost no work, you know, yeah, on its FIFA games.
For the FIFA games on the Wii, the Wii U and the PlayStation Vita, they essentially rehashed an old game and they just updated the menus. They didn't even change any of the, well, that's not true. They did change some of the sock colors and that's about it.
Sock colors.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, actually, that was one of the main complaints about Tiger Woods 2013 for the PC is that they used the same, they used the exact same thing with Tiger Woods.
Yes.
12. Mm-hmm. And here's the kicker. They charged them for, what was it, online play or something like that. You know, they had an extra charge. So not only were they playing last year's game, but they were playing more to have full functionality of the previous game. Oh, that's right, online.
Because the previous year's game had been turned off. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I don't know. I find it, you know, it's April Fool's. And, you know, I don't think it's really kicking them when they're down. I mean, I think what is this, a case of too soon for you? I mean, is it painful
I
now?
Know that it,
when
I don't
the Wii
know
U is dead, it'll be funny.
I don't know that it's too soon. It seems mean-spirited for somebody that you know doesn't support the Wii U, to go off on a Wii U rant like that. And, you know, somebody's got to stand up for Nintendo since Paul's not here.
Yeah, I was about to say, I was wondering what Paul, probably steam would be coming out of his ears at this point.
I think so. You know, and like I said, it's unprofessional. I understand having an April Fool's gag, that's fine. But having an April Fool's gag that is making fun of another company's shortcomings doesn't seem cool to me.
I just am tired of the Half-Life 3 April Fool's. I mean, it's enough is enough. We get it.
I think we should go back and do Duke Nukem Forever jokes.
Yeah, well, guess
just
what?
Pretend,
after that game came out,
a lot pretend of Duke Nukem Forever never came out.
A lot of people are wishing that it never came
in
out.
In limbo somewhere.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Jordan.
Indies praise X1's... let me try that again. Indies praise Xbox One self-publishing, but Microsoft must drop its launch party policy. This comes to
parody,
you from
parody,
Edge.
Parody.
Oh, sorry. Let me try that again. Indies praise Xbox One self-publishing, but Microsoft must drop its launch parody policy. This comes to us from The Edge.
Edge Max, not The Edge. Come on.
Edge Online, right? The ID at Xbox program is being hailed as a success by indies releasing games through the initiative, but Microsoft must revise its launch parody policy if Xbox One is to become as indie-friendly as rival PS4. During Game Developers Conference, Microsoft announced that it has sent Xbox One dev kits to over 250 independent studios and has also confirmed a roster of 25 self-published games to be released through ID at Xbox in the coming weeks and months. While the indies we spoke to at the GDC launch event were delighted with how much friendlier Microsoft has been in recent months, there were still lingering concerns over launch parody.
By the way, when they say we, I think it's Edge Magazine, not me and Jordan. I mean, I was going to go to GDC, but I just couldn't find the time, but maybe next year.
And I have an actual job. Many indies have voiced their concerns over the clause, while some studios with the time and resources required to execute a multi-platform launch see launch parity as a positive move. However, Born Ready Games CEO James Brooks, whose Strike Suit Zero is coming to Xbox One, stated, quote, "Every GDC, you have a meeting with Microsoft guy and say, one day this is going to have to change. I think it was a case of grinding them down every year." Hyperlight Drifter creator Alex Preston stated, quote, "Microsoft used to be assholes about it, for sure. They've become a lot friendlier, and that has to do with ID at Xbox head Chris Charla and his team. He's awesome. He's a major proponent for smaller developers like us."
Now, to explain parity, launch parity, it says basically it's Microsoft says that, well, if you're going to launch a game on the Xbox One, you got to launch it. It's got to be a game that launches with everybody at once. You know, you can't have launched it first on over there and stuff like that. You know, some of the smaller ones, you know, don't want that, and some of the larger developers say, hey, you know what, it maximizes profits for us to have to launch with everybody, you know, all platforms at once and all that stuff. So, Jordan, what do you think?
So I think the idea of what Microsoft is doing makes perfect sense in that they don't want old games going to the Xbox One. This is something that Sony has not learned yet. And we see the same thing with the PlayStation Vita and now the PlayStation 4 more and more often. For example, the big announcement for the PlayStation Vita was Fez. Yay, Fez is on the Vita. Yay!
Well, actually, you know, the big announcement is that Guacamelee is going to be on the Xbox One and Wii and all that stuff.
There's going to be an HD version of Guacamelee coming out for both the PS4 and the Xbox One. But again, it's an old game, right? I don't understand. You know, people don't buy consoles, new consoles, to play old games. So, you know, that's one of the big things for me. You know, Sony was talking about Binding of Isaac coming to the PlayStation 4. Not, you know, a fine game. Love to see the game on another platform. It's not something to get excited about because it's anybody who wanted to play it when we had, like, with Mass Effect, anybody who wanted to play it already played it 2 years ago.
I'm sort of excited about Guacamelee. It's a game that I was always intrigued by.
Ah.
You know, what I thought initially when they were talking about the parity policy was Microsoft lumping everything into one store, you know, retail games, arcade games, digital games, everything into one thing. And I still have a problem with that. I mean, I want to know which games are, you know, digital games that are from store games, you know, and, you know, like arcade games and indie games, you know, I do want special sections for each of them. And I understand why some of them might want to be mixed in with the big boys, but sometimes you can get a lot more lost like that.
The navigation on the Xbox Store has been terrible, on the 360 at least. I haven't really gone looking for stuff on the Xbox One.
It's not quite as cryptic. At least when you go into the store, you have some, you know. But the problem there is that it's so Kinect-oriented that...
Yeah, if you don't use Kinect, you can't find anything, and I think they did that intentionally.
You use Bing and boom.
Right.
On the other hand, you know, I mean, they do advertise the big stuff pretty well, though, you know?
I had to unhook my 360 Kinect to hook up and have room for my Xbox One Kinect. So now try navigating the store on the 360 without a Kinect, and you're kind of out of luck.
Oh, you just go to Bing and you just type it in. I mean, you know. Yeah. Actually, you know, Microsoft announced that they have another update coming. One of the things that really burns me, and I've already said this in the past few shows, is that Microsoft, and I guess Sony too, have proved, you know, that they don't listen to that old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know? I mean, it's okay to improve something, but don't tear down what you've done and start over again. You know,
well, you know, they had that, Sony had that with the Vita as well. They had the 3.1 firmware and then had to come out with 3.12 because 3.1 was bricking machines.
Ooh.
Oops.
Well, at least now the Xbox One understands yes and no, because the previous patch turned that off. So when I would say Xbox turn off, it would have the yes, no there. And I would say yes, 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 yes. And it didn't listen to me because it didn't know the word yes anymore.
That was funny. I never ran into that one.
You know, one of the more fascinating things is that my controller had a firmware update. When I got my new headset, it actually learned, you know, and it's kind of cool that your controller has a processor of its own, which isn't that new, because remember way back when
Atari Jaguar had that, yeah.
Yeah, but that was a little different. Programmers had to use the joystick alone. They never used the actual processor.
Yeah, the processor wasn't in the controller, though. It was on the motherboard. It was just, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I believe Kinect itself has its own processor, too.
I think it has more than one, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, let me ask you a question. How important are indie games to you on your console?
They're not. I don't play indie games. I have looked at them on YouTube and decided, you know, most of them are going for this 8-bit aesthetic that I grew up with, and that's fine, but we've evolved past that point, and I have no desire to repeat that genre.
Well, there are some, you know, games that do, you know, bring something new that aren't trying to do.
Fez, I played the first level of Fez. I thought it was cute. I never went back to it.
I'm thinking about games like Braid and Limbo and, you know, those sort of games that...
I think Braid was fine up to a point. I think I got... I forget how far I got into Braid, but...
You ever finished it?
No, I never finished Braid.
Oh, I love Braid.
Yeah, I'm just not into indie games. Child of Light looks like it has promise. I'll take a look at Child of Light. Maybe.
Wait a minute. Wait, that already came out on the 360, didn't it? Or am I thinking something else? No. I'm thinking about the sequel. You know, that game that was actually the sequel to Rez. Remember? And it was a Kinect game. Well, actually, it was a sort of...
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're thinking of...
Child of Eden. That's right.
Child of Eden.
Yeah, yeah, so
Child of Light is not really. It's a digital game. It's not an indie game. It's done by Ubisoft, and it really looks beautiful. It looks like if you're familiar with comic book artist Charles Vess, it looks like something Charles Vess would do.
Well, you know, Ubisoft always loves to do that, though. Ubisoft always loves to have, and it's a French company, you know. And the thing I love about Ubisoft is that their games are a little bit off.
Right.
Not off as in bad, but I just mean a little. You know, there's always something that's not quite mainstream, no matter how mainstream they make it, you know, because they're French.
Think of Child of Light as mixing. It's a cross between Rayman and Brave. That's probably the best way to describe it.
Well, that's just it. You know, that's one of my points, is that Rayman, you know, it's a Mario clone, But it's about as un-Mario as you can get.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
You know,
and it always has been, right?
I'm just saying they always have that. Yeah, I remember Child of Light. Yeah.
Child of Light comes out April 30th.
Yeah. It actually reminds me of that game that came out on XBLA that was a hand-drawn animated thing by that guy who was trying to make – it's funny. He was trying to make a cartoon, and the game came out before he could do the cartoon. Tales – I forgot the name of it. Tale – I'm going to have to look it up right now. Oh, Dust and Elysian Tale. You ever see that?
No, I never saw that.
Really? You should try it. You know what? Get the demo on Xbox Live Arcade for your Xbox 360. Hey, guess what? There's demos on the Xbox 360. Remember those? Dust and Elysian Tail. And Tail spelled T-A-I-L, as in a tail. You there? Hello?
I am. I figured you didn't want to hear me chewing.
Oh, okay. I'm just saying, remember those, you know, demos?
Demos were amazing.
Yeah. Anyways, it's an Xbox 360 game, so check out the demo. The cel shaded animation in Dust and Elysian Tale is absolutely amazing, rivaling even Ni No Kuni.
Interesting.
Yeah. And like I said, it was supposed to be a cartoon, but he never got around to the cartoon. By the way, when you play Dust and Elysian Tale, I want you to keep one thing in mind. This was all done by one guy.
Wow.
And when you see it, it's like, whoa, you know, the animation and all that stuff by one guy. It's a 2D side-scroller, basically. Okay, so we're going to move on to the next item as soon as I can find myself again. Okay. Uncharted 4 game director leaves Naughty Dog. And this comes to us from Forbes. In yet another departure from Sony's video game division, this time Justin Richmond, the game director. I botched that. Yet another departure from Sony's video game division. This time, Justin Richmond, the game director on the upcoming PS4 exclusive Uncharted 4. Well, I don't think anybody who owns an Xbox One was hoping for, an adaptation somewhere down the line. I have, in fact, made the decision to leave Naughty Dog, Richmond told IGN. I love the company and the people, and I know they will continue to create awesome games going forward. On a happier note, after careful consideration and exploration, I have joined Riot Games. There's some really innovative stuff going on there I can't wait to be a part of. This comes close on the heels of another high-profile departure from Naughty Dog, a wholly-owned subsidiary of Sony. Amy Hennig, the longtime writer and director on the Uncharted franchise, left the studio earlier this month. Indeed, there have been an unusual number of resignations and departures from Sony's various game studios, as well as a number of layoffs, all despite the enormous success of the new PlayStation 4 console. Richmond's move to Riot Games places him at the forefront of the free-to-play movement. Riot is responsible for the smash hit League of Legends, which I know a certain person in your household is a big fan of.
Alan plays an awful lot of League of Legends, yes.
And the company is owned by Chinese behemoth Tencent. By the way, Riot also does the best kick-ass parties at all the cons, at E3 and at PAX.
I would hope so.
They have pizza and those mini and sliders. I make sure if I know there's a Riot party going on, I don't eat anything all day because they're going to have some great food there.
The name like Riot, it has to be good.
Yeah. So anyway, now we all know about the problems that have been suffered by The Last Guardian, you know, with the weird departures from that game. Now we have this from Uncharted 2, and this cannot be good if two of the major creative talents behind your game just decide to up and leave.
Rumor has it that Amy Hennig at least was not happy with the direction it was going. So it makes me wonder whose direction are we talking about if now the other guy in charge of the game is also gone.
This is one of their flagship titles. I mean, even more so than Infamous, obviously. I mean, it was the first Uncharted that put the PS3 on the map.
All of the Uncharted games have been kind of the Sony equivalent of the Halo titles. It's what draws people to the platform.
Well, Uncharted 3 was sort of a disappointment both in sales and in gameplay. Uncharted 2
is definitely the peak of the series.
Yeah. Basically, this is Sony's Halo, right?
This is Sony's Halo.
Yeah.
It does seem strange that people are leaving. We'll see how things go. I think the big thing coming up right now, out of the different development studios is the leaked, PlayStation 4 version of Last of Us, which is coming at some point in the future.
Yeah.
It was leaked by a Spanish gaming site.
But that doesn't impress me. I mean, rehashing your most successful game on the PS3 and one, by the way, that was released how long ago? A year ago?
Exactly. And this goes to what I was saying previously about people don't buy new consoles to play old games. But apparently it's going to be some sort of, complete with all the DLC, Game of the Year edition, blah, 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 blah. We'll see what that does.
I ask you a question. Uncharted is out now. What is the next big thing, aside from Uncharted, that's coming to the PS? Killzone was released already as a launch title.
Well, if you're talking about exclusives, there's not much. I mean, the head of God of War was supposed to be working on a title. They blew $100 million on that game, and now they have nothing to show for it. He's out.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. What is going on with Sony Santa Monica? I mean,
yeah,
is there a God of War? And it seems like the game that they're working on is not God of War.
It's not God of War. There was another title done by the guy who does God of War, and they apparently, it's just not ready for anything. And now he's gone. It looks like production on it has been shut down. Drive Club has been rebuilt from the ground up. The director of Drive Club has left as well, apparently for family reasons, not for anything to do with the game. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where things go.
It's just very strange, for a console that's supposedly doing, selling well, although the sales in Japan have petered off. I mean, we discussed this last week, but it's less to do with the PlayStation 4 and more to do with Japan. But
that doesn't surprise me. Yeah,
I don't know. It's just odd. I mean, let's take a sort of a Microsoft equivalent here. Bungie. But basically, what happened was that sort of the opposite happened with Bungie and Halo. I mean, the company moved on, but members of Bungie stayed on for 343 Industries to continue Halo, right?
Right.
So in that case, you had people, leaving to stick with an IP. Here you have people leaving an IP, and it just
the next big game for both the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One is going to be Destiny.
Destiny. I was thinking about Watch Dogs.
Watch Dogs is starting to drop off. I think they've missed their window of opportunity, the Watch Dogs.
They were discussing Watch Dogs on Rebel FM, and they were talking about how there are certain challenges that started popping up. And part of it is the fact that you want a populated city, right? You don't want an empty city. Right. Like, one of the big complaints about Batman Arkham Origins is that it's Gotham, but there's almost no one on Gotham, and they hand wave it by saying, well, everybody's been told to, there's a curfew, and everybody's been told to stay inside, so all you have are criminals out there. But the thing is that, if you're going to be in a city, right, you want a lot of people to react. I mean, one of the things that people loved in the Spider-Man games is that when Spider-Man swung around, there were pedestrians there. Someone would take their cell phone cameras out and start recording them, but there would be a reaction to them.
Right, and that was that's one of the things that drives Infamous Second Son as well, is the audience factor.
Yeah, but the thing is that I think Ubisoft is finding that they're trying to bite a lot more than they can chew with Watch Dogs, and that's
have every citizen of the city be an interactive, story point, right?
Yeah, that's
everybody has their own story.
Well, I mean, that's something you can sort of randomize,
Yeah.
But I don't know. Are you still excited about Watch Dogs?
I'm still excited about Watch Dogs, but I get the feeling from the internet that gamers as a whole are becoming less excited by it. And the last batch of demos that you saw, people felt that it looked inferior to the stuff they'd seen before, and that's going to drive sales down.
Well, just so you know, at PAX East, Ubisoft emailed me saying that they have a brand new demo that hasn't been seen yet. So that, well, there's that at least.
You know, forget the demos. They you know, we're long past the point where the game needs to be ready to come out. So, you know, a demo is fine, but you know, they really need
open world game.
They really need to show a completed game at PAX is what they need, not a demo.
Is this Ubisoft's first open world game?
No, Ubisoft was behind all of the Assassin's Creed games.
Oh, that's right. Well, yeah, I mean, and they're also using a lot of the middleware that was used in the Assassin's Creed as well. So
yeah, they really don't have any excuse.
Yeah. Anyways, that's all the news we have because it's April 1st and they're not letting us have a lot of news. You know, it's like everything is April Fool's jokes right now.
It's a lot of goofy stuff. Did you see the Nerf Nuke on ThinkGeek? I really would like a Nerf Nuke.
No, but they do have the Garrus Vakarian body pillow. And the thing is, if you try to buy it, it just the buy it now moves around away from your cursor.
Of course.
And then it says, finally says, listen, this is an April Fool's joke, but you know what? They does provide a code for 15% or 14% off other ancillary items. Not the games, but, you know, the other knickknacks and doodads that they sell.
Right, right.
So at least they have an April Fool's sale. So, you know, but I think a lot of people, a lot of fans would love a Garrus Vakarian body pillow because that's the most that's the favorite romantic target for femship.
Well, you know, maybe when they get enough demand, they will end up making one.
You mean like the tie?
Like the tie or the Tauntaun sleeping bag, you know.
I want a Tauntaun
sleeping with the lightsaber zipper.
Well, so long as it doesn't smell bad on the inside, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Well, here's the thing. It's going to smell on the inside, but, you know, it's going to smell worse on the inside than it does on the outside.
Yeah. Well, so long as it doesn't smell at all on the inside. Thank you very much. There's just so much of a reference to the film that I could take, you know. Anyways, we do have listener feedback. Go ahead, Jordan.
From Alpha Shard, hey guys, great episode. I found Infamous to be a pretty easy game. If they make the third even more so, it just seems sad. Not a lot of games seem to be as difficult as the old 8-bit games. I do like the paper trail feature Jordan talked about, and I know Rockstar is a similar thing, though not quite as cool as unlocking more missions through using the website. You can still track your progress of various games on the site.
Wait, what, paper trail?
Paper trail is the bit that you play on the website to unlock more in-game missions.
I forgot about
which then unlocks more on the website.
Okay. By the way, there was an article saying that Rockstar refused to deal with the Xbox One anymore. And when you clicked on the thing, it was all about Mick Jagger not liking the Xbox One. just to get people hits on that April Fool's joke.
Exactly, yeah. Hearing Paul spending $200 on in-game purchases on a Facebook game just makes me sad. We'll have to tell Paul that he made Alpha Shard sad. I know it's his choice on how to spend money, but a lot of Facebook games really seem to encourage you to spend real money to get fake in-game money just to speed things up and make the game enjoyable. The Foxtrot comic Jonah brought up is a good example of why I don't like those games. I feel like it's lazy game making and undeserving of my money. I know they got to make money and to pay their bills, but I don't like what they're selling. I guess, though, there is a demand for these types of games. Who am I to judge? I'll stop beating the dead horse now. At Oculus bought by Facebook, when I first heard the news, I was like, why? I wasn't the only one scratching my head at this. I didn't really want to think of virtual Farmville. I do like the idea, though, of remote classroom, though. I know we already have video for that sort of thing. If anyone's going to really want to wear this thing on their head, it's like a fancier virtual boy.
By the way, $2 billion is sort of misleading because they actually gave them $300 million and the rest in stock.
Stock, yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly. And well, the other thing about Oculus too, did you see that the employees of the company started getting death threats?
Oh, please.
I mean, it's okay to be upset when one company acquires another, but death threats? Well, seriously?
You know, can you imagine if Microsoft purchased Oculus? There'll be firebombs. The thing is that I wrote a tweet that said, you know what, I love the fact that this Oculus purchase is making stupid people angry.
My whole feeling on the whole Oculus Rift thing is that they built a product designed to be an acquisition target, and it's never going to go anything farther than that.
You know, the thing is that, you know, people don't seem to understand that they didn't sell the Oculus VR
right
to Facebook. They sold the entire company, you know.
Exactly.
It's sort of like saying, well, and, you know, I pre-ordered a Wii U, which means I should, oh, if Nintendo sells itself to another company, I should get a share of that. You know, no, you bought the product, and the only time you should be upset is if you don't get the product, you know?
Right.
I mean, if Ouya had sold itself to Creative Labs, right, or someone like that for $1 billion, just because you backed the Ouya doesn't mean that you invested in the company. You just pre-ordered and bought a console. That's all you did, you know, and Kickstarter is very upfront. This is not investment. This is purchasing. This is pre-purchasing. This is backing something you want to see made. That's it. You don't have any other stake in it. You're just getting a product.
At the question of the week, was, do you subscribe to any print gaming magazines? I subscribe to Game Informer, which can be read online now. It does seem like a less and less necessary now, though, given how easy it is to hear about good gaming news.
You know, the thing is that there's something about sitting back and opening up a magazine and reading it rather than reading it on a website or on a tablet or something like that. The funny thing is, I wonder how many people under a certain age feel that way, that they like the tactile sensation of reading it. Because, you know, when you read a newspaper, you know, you're given all the articles that you can scan at once and you can just peruse through until you find something you like, you know.
The problem with print media in general is that it moves too slow, particularly for an industry like ours. You know, we run into issues all the time where maybe something doesn't go right with the podcast and we end up scrapping it and we can't reuse any of the stories because they're already too old after 1 week. Magazines take 3 months to produce. So, you know, it seems to me less and less likely that print is going to be surviving, at least for our industry.
Well, Game Informer this month has Arkham Knight, which was only announced like a week ago. So they're privy to it for a lot longer while before we
do. That's true.
But the thing is, you know, I think I digest things a lot more when I read them in print than I do if I'm reading it online. You know, there's something more digestible about reading it on the page. But I'm wondering if it's because of where I come from and, you know, where kids are coming from today, if they're able to digest, you know, if they digest, you know, websites like I digest print, you know?
Well, what I like doing when I get, see a story out there, I like being able to hit it and get, you know, four or five different sources talking about the same story and being able to compare and contrast different coverages instead of being stuck with a single point of view.
Anyway, we do have a question of the week, and it is, what's your favorite video game related April Fool's joke? And I don't want to hear about the tie, Jordan. Nothing that you just mentioned. And it can't involve Half-Life 3 either.
No, it's not gonna be that. There was way back in the early days of the PlayStation, there was a Tekken game that came out.
Oh yes, this one.
and in the opening video, one character seemed to be unusually prominent. And nobody really seemed to know who this character was. They weren't in the game. And so this entire mythology built up. What was the character's name? Alonzo? Something like that. Mm. Alfonso? Something
Wait,
like
was,
that.
Which game was this again?
It was Tekken, I believe. Oh, or Tekken okay. 2.
Because I remember they had the Shenlong trick for Street Fighter 2 way back when.
I have to look it up now. I believe it was Alfonso. And so, you know, it took on a life of its own on the internet. Everyone was talking about Alfonso and different ways to unlock Alfonso. And none of it was real. Absolutely none of it was real. Yeah. It was just by coincidence that this one character in the opening animation looked like a main character in the game, but was not. And, it was very funny.
You know, I think the first video game-related April Fool's joke was by EGM back in 1991, in which there was a code that could unlock Simon Belmont for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, the arcade game. It's in the letters section. Mine, oh, damn. You know this one very well as well. And it was one that struck a nerve because people really wanted it. Remember the arcade cabinet for the iPad?
That was yes, the iCade.
Yeah, the iCade that, you know, I think you did desperately wanted that to be a real item, even though knowing it was an April Fool's joke.
And they turned it into a real item.
Yeah, but it wasn't the same, you know, quite at the same, you know. And the real April Fool's joke is that I wish Apple and MAME, you know, come on, people. I want MAME on my iPad. I mean, I still have it on my old computer. I have to put it over to my new computer, actually, now that I think about it. MAME is the greatest gift ever given to computer gamers. Seriously. It's a lot, you know, just because, you know, those are games I enjoyed, damn it. Anyways, let us know what your favorite video game related April Fool's joke was or is. You know, maybe there's one out now, or if you can't think of one, just peruse through. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. I'll set us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast and the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum, or send us your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at GameStooge.com. Team USA's Pinsanity is still on Facebook, I think. And like I said, this is a kind of short episode, but that's because it's April Fool's and there's not many news items out there. And one of the news items is about April Fool's.
Yeah, and you don't want us talking about April Fool's Day when it's already after April Fool's Day by the time you're hearing this.
But, you know, sometimes a short episode is good. So we'll see you next week. Hopefully Paul will be over his hurt back, because that's why I was not able to do this show.
Hopefully. And, you know, speaking as somebody who has had back injuries, I wish Paul the best.
You know, actually, you know, we should tell him that getting back injuries that debilitate you are a sign you're getting to that sort of age.
Well, it could be that sort of age. In my case, it was just, you know, my spine tried to kill me.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes your back just seizes up because whatever, you know, it hasn't.
Yes,
there's no
absolutely.
Reason for it. Just decides, you know what? I'm going to torture him for the next 72 hours. Make it impossible for you to stand up or sit down. And if you're lying down, you think it's going to get better. But no, it gets worse.
It's like the back has decided to tell you you're not going to die. You'll just wish you were dead.
That's the other question of the week. What was your worst back pain? No, I'm not gonna. Anyways, we'll see you next week.
Good night, everybody.